my lovelies. Welcome to another episode of the Sacred Cocoon Podcast. I hope you're having a wonderful day or night. So in today's episode, what I would like to share with you is some, behind the scenes tidbits about being a professional tarot reader, or what it's like to be a professional tarot reader. A day in the life, maybe? A slice of life. I don't know. I'm just throwing in catchphrases now. But yeah, so I don't know about you, but I am one of those people who loves to hear like the personal backstory and the personal like day-to-day goings on of people that I follow, like artists or fellow readers or just really anyone. I like people. I like learning about people, and there's just something really fun about like behind the scenes. This is what goes on when I'm not doing my professional thing, whatever my professional thing is, you know. And I feel like we don't necessarily get a lot of that from professional readers. I could be completely wrong there, because I feel like that probably happens. I'm sure it must happen. Like, it probably happens a lot on YouTube, and I might just not have seen a lot of it. So if you have done it, for one, if you've done it and you're a professional reader, please let me know. Send me a link to the video or something, because I'm nosy and I want to watch it. I want to hear it, whatever. But for two, if you've made it and I just don't know about it, I'm sorry. But yeah, so I just thought it would be fun to do something like that. Just to share a few of those little things with you all. I also want to share this because one of my big things that I'm really passionate about and I really care about is encouraging people to be themselves and to not be scared to be a reader, I guess. I mean, for one, I don't want anyone to feel scared to be themselves. But for two, I feel like I meet a lot of people, I guess I'll say it like this. I meet a lot of people who are genuinely really good at reading, and genuinely really good at like giving really good advice and very supportive, but they feel like they're not, finger quotes, enough or not good enough to be a professional reader. And it usually comes down to, I mean, for one thing, it can be a confidence thing. But for two, it can just be feeling like you're not, you have to be like super mysterious or super like business-like, I guess. And that, you know, if you show anything of your, I'm trying to find a way to say this, but like if you show your like personality a lot, like that's gonna be a bad thing. And so they get nervous about doing it, because they're like, well, I can't be like that, I can't be weird, basically. To which I counter, if you can't be weird in a tarot reading room, or you know, whatever scenario you're doing a reading in, if you can't be weird, then when people are kind of expecting to some degree some aspect of like magicalness, like when can you be kind of weird? but in all seriousness, I think there's a lot of that. I see a lot of fear around being like people not liking you for who you truly are, but feeling like you can't maintain some kind of like outer professional thing. Wow, the words, they flow. And I want to tell you that that's not true. As a fellow odd person, I can attest that I too am an odd person, and that definitely comes through my readings, at least to some degree, and people seem to really like it. And I mean, you know, as a professional reader, really as anything, you're never gonna click with like 100% of people, right? You're always gonna have the potential that you could have someone as a client who just doesn't really click with you, and who might not super like you. And that's, it's okay if that happens. You can't click with everyone. You're not everyone's cup of tea. And that's completely okay, because I if you're drawn to this kind of work, I feel like if you're drawn to helping people and you want to give guidance and you want to support someone in their journey and their growth, and you want to give them that space to speak about things, and you want to help them to heal and those kind of things, then you're probably going to attract more people who resonate with you and who do like you than you are people who don't and who don't like you. And so it's really okay. It gets less scary to not be liked when you can see that there are lots of people who do like you. So I hope for one that that helps. So yeah, I feel like I'm a little bit disjointed, but I've been trying to do this over and over, so I'm just gonna keep going. So I want to get into a couple of things from behind the scenes in the life of a professional psychic, professional tarot reader, to show you what it's like in that reading room or in day to day life, day to day work. What happens? Some of my little quirks. Also some tips for if you do read for other people and you get kind of nervous. Hopefully these things can help you too. So the first thing I want to say is kind of based off that thing of that feeling like you need a professional mystique is this. I don't think I have a professional mystique. I don't think anyone that has mystique maybe giggles as much as I do. that's that thing. And actually the giggling is a big thing about me. So I have had many clients comment on my laughing and my giggling and that they like it. And I've had a couple people who were like, why are you giggling at this? Like, it's definitely been kind of like, not 100% of people, but like 99% of clients that come in for a reading, they're like, oh, they like that I'm kind of giggly. And so that's the thing. Being giggly is just part of me. I can't help it. Like, I don't know what it is. I just laugh a lot. I just giggle all the time. not all the time, not literally all the time, but a lot. And anyway, like one of the things that I hear a lot in the shop that I work in, which if you don't know, if you're not local, is the Four of Wands in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Or even, actually, you know, when I record readings for people too, which is what I do for my Etsy, I also giggle in recordings too. So just wherever I do readings, really, it's like a staple. But people will comment, or like the other people in the shop that run the shop will comment that they can tell a reading is going really well because they can hear us laughing, or they'll say like, we can hear you having fun because they can hear us, me and the client, and definitely me giggling away in the back room, in the little reading room. And so yeah, that's one thing. So what I'm trying to say there is, like, don't try to suppress some part of your personality because you're afraid that people aren't gonna like it. Because if you have something that's just kind of like a quirk that you have, like my giggliness is to me, or my specific kind of laugh or whatever, you know, it's like, that's something that people attribute to you and they like it about you. So for me, I find that like when I go in that reading room, I have it set up in a specific way. And I'll come to this in a little bit too, because I want to have this as a separate tip, but, they come into that room and I want to make it feel really safe. I want it to feel warm and inviting. Sometimes it's literally warm, but I try not to make it too warm. But at least metaphorically, warm, inviting, safe, secure. My business name is The Sacred Cocoon, and I want to make it feel like that. I want it to feel like a little cocoon that you go into, and whatever you say in there is okay. You know, I'm not going to judge you. There's going to be no judgment. And, you know, if there's any, like, I mean, clients can attest to this too. If they tell me, like, oh, someone was kind of, you know, mean to me about this, or they were judgy, like, I'm a protective person. I'll kind of just get slightly up in arms. I try to stay unbiased, but these are my clients, and gosh dang it, you are not going to make them feel bad. Or I will fight you. But yeah, it's like, I want to make it feel good. I want to make it feel inviting. And part of what helps to do that for me is to be able to get them to laugh. So I don't really do this. I don't think I really do this, like, intentionally, I guess. It's not like I'm, like, cracking puns and, like, spinning plates and flipping cards with the other hand, you know. But, like, I like to just help them feel at ease. So one way that I like to do this is, once we get all sat down and settled in, I'll walk through the spread with them, or I'll ask them, you know, I'll do the kind of, like, how can I help, what do you want to look at today, all that kind of thing. And then when we get shuffling, and the first thing I do is I usually joke about my shuffling, because I've been reading for, I think this is 15 or 16 years this year, I can't remember. But anyway, all that to say, I'm still terrible at shuffling. I can only really do overhand shuffling. Sometimes I get overconfident and I try and do riffle shuffle, and I'm not very good at it. But you'll find that a lot of people also feel like they are not very good at shuffling cards. So if you can be like, you know what, I also suck at shuffling cards, makes them feel a bit better. And you can kind of laugh about it. And then if there's certain cards that come up that people find scary, I'll say something like, oh, don't be scared of that guy, like, it's gonna be okay. So for example, cards that in tarot that you might do that for is like Death, the Tower, the Devil, the Ten of Swords, the Eight of Swords, the Three of Swords, the Swords, the Five of Pentacles. Those are all cards that people, especially those major arcana cards, but those are all cards that people look at and they go, oh my god. Like, if they, especially if they have no experience of tarot and they don't know it, those cards look scary. So if you can, like, put them at ease and kind of have a little bit of a giggle as well, and be like, oh yeah, don't worry about that guy, he looks scary, but, or they look scary, but it's fine, like, we're gonna get into it and I promise it's gonna be okay. It's all okay. It puts them at ease. It makes them feel like, okay, I can relax. But also, it just, usually people will laugh when I say that, because it's just, I don't know what it is about it. It just seems to make people feel better when they hear that. And it's just a good icebreaker. And the reason that breaking the ice is good and important, and being able to get into that more friendly, personal type of way of talking with someone, is because if someone's coming into that room for a reading, if they have come and asked you for a reading, they're probably going to get pretty vulnerable with you. You know, they're coming to you because they need help with something, they need guidance, they need to talk about something, they don't know what to do about something, and that's scary. It is scary to open up to someone. I mean, a lot of people are scared of that anyway, and then imagine trying to do it with someone that you might not know. Like, if they've never been in before, if they've never been in with you before, then they don't know you. And they're about to open up and be really vulnerable and honest with you and tell you what's going on. And that, to me, is what makes a good reading, is if you come in and you tell me what you really want to know about and what we can really get into, that makes a good reading. But it is inherently vulnerable. So being able to make that person feel that you are friendly and you're not scary, and this doesn't have to be a scary thing, and that's another thing that I say a lot is, oh, nothing scary, I promise, you know. It's like just making it feel inviting and soothing and just good. That's going to go a long way to helping people feel less scared. So that brings me to number two. However nervous you feel, the other person probably feels more nervous than you do. And honestly, the more that you read for other people, and especially if you're reading professionally, it can be scary when you first start out reading professionally, because if you've never, you know, received money before, and now you are, that's, it's like you're kind of changing the dynamics. And so I get that that can be scary, but that kind of goes away over time anyway. And you'll get more comfortable. But I promise you, even if you feel super scared, that other person probably feels way more scared than you do, because they have to be vulnerable with you. It's like, you don't have to really be vulnerable with them. And you might feel vulnerable in terms of, I'm reading this card for someone and they're listening to me and I have to kind of like be able to flow with what I'm saying and all of that. And that can definitely be scary. But they're not thinking about that. They're thinking about what they had to kind of open up to be able to tell you. And that's scary to them. So if you feel nervous, just know that they probably feel more nervous than you. And that might help you to just feel a bit more relaxed. And I try and look at it as like, okay, even if I'm, sometimes I'll still get nervous a little bit. Like if it's the first reading of the day, sometimes I'll have this like irrational fear pop up in my head. But I'm like, oh my God, I've forgotten every card meaning. It hasn't happened to me yet, but I have that fear. But still, they're probably not thinking that, you know, because they're just thinking that they feel nervous themselves. And even me just knowing that they also feel kind of nervous makes it less scary, because it's not like me trying to impress some person who's going to be like, that's wrong, and judging me, you know. They're just another nervous person, and we're just two nervous people trying to feel all right. So that can really help too, to just help make things feel better like that. So the third thing, that going off that, if you do get nervous, the third thing I guess I should say is that I'm actually, at least in myself, feel like I'm a very awkward person and quite a shy person too. I'm definitely introverted. I'm a shy person. I don't generally find it easy to really strike up conversation with someone new, and I have this, like, I think this is an anxious thing too, as well as a shy thing of like feeling like if I don't strike up conversation then I seem rude, but if I do try and strike up conversation I seem awkward. So that's something that happens in my brain a lot. But when I go inside my reading room, that's my domain. I feel good in there, right? It's like, okay, I have everything set up how I like. And it's a small space and it's just me and them. And I lose my nerves then. I feel like I'm way different in how confident I seem as a reader. Or like if I'm doing something like this, then if you just meet me out and about and I'm kind of like, I feel like then I'm just sort of, I don't know, why do I want to say a spider trying to walk on water? That's a weird metaphor, but maybe that is what I look like, I don't know. But yeah, so there's that. Like, I'm a shy person, but in that reading room, there's something about it that makes me lose that shyness. I think it is because I know the other person feels vulnerable, and that puts me into, I want to make them feel better, and I want to give them a less scary experience that makes me feel less scared. I go into my Virgo rising, motherly, like, gentle sort of thing right there, and I stop being my awkward, like, gangly self that's outside that room. So yeah, you might be a shy person. Like, if you're shy, and even if you feel socially awkward and you don't know how to talk to people, don't let that put you off trying to be a professional reader. I know it sounds really counterintuitive, because you're like, how could I be a good reader with the public, with people that I don't know, if I'm socially awkward? And this definitely, you know, obviously isn't for everyone, and it's okay if you feel socially awkward, no matter what situation you're in. Like, that sucks, because I know it feels bad, but, like, you know, if this doesn't apply to you, then this is not a judgment on your character. But what I want to say with that, I guess, really is, I bet that that a lot of people that feel when they're outside that safe space, like they're sort of awkward and weird and don't know how to do things, that when you get into that one-to-one situation with someone and it's you sort of giving them the guidance and having that conversation with them, that you will be a lot better at it than you think you would be. Don't get scared off by feeling that you don't do great in a sort of social group situation, because in a reading there are so few instances when that is ever going to be a thing that you're doing. Like, I've done a couple things where I read for people, like, one after the other, and I've done a couple, like, things where I've read for, like, two people at once, or I've sometimes had groups of people in, which honestly is not my favourite, because it's not my comfort zone. I definitely do better one-to-one. But, you know, the vast majority of my readings are one-to-one, and I do great one-to-one, usually. So don't let it scare you off. And then the other thing, I feel like I was going to say something else then too, and I just totally lost what it was. But what was I going to say? Oh, it's just totally gone. That's really annoying. Oh well, maybe it'll come back. So I'm just going to move on. The next thing I want to say is, no, I'm going to save that for another episode. That's too big to get into. That's not like, this is, I'm just going to move on from the thing I was going to say, because I'm going to talk about it at a different point. Ooh, suspense, but not really. I want to say also, people ask me, like, do I get tired? Do I find it hard to read for multiple people in a day? You know, how do I do it? Is it difficult? The answer to that is, honestly, yeah, I do get tired, especially like around reading 5. Like my typical amount of readings on a Friday and Saturday when I'm in person, at least, is like usually around 5 to 7 readings a day. When I get to that 5 mark, I'm starting to get kind of tired. By the time I get to 7 or sometimes 8, I am knackered. Like, I want to go home and go to bed. Like, I'm tired. You do build up stamina for reading, and like tapping into all the things that you tap into when you read. You do get used to it, and part of it is, you know, if you've listened to the previous episodes, like having boundaries and having energetic boundaries definitely helps. But yeah, it's tiring. Like, just talking to 7 or 8 people, I think that's tiring for a lot of people. And then if you're introverted, I think it's tiring as well on a different level, because it's 7 or 8 different people's energies. And then you add on the fact that if you're reading for someone, most people that come in for a reading, they're not coming in for a reading just to be like, oh yeah, everything's great, I'm just coming to hang out. Like, most people, when they come for a reading, they've got a reason. So they've got something emotional going on, and it might not be something emotionally pleasant, so they're probably going to tell you what's going on, and so that requires you to react to that in a way of, you know, you want to comfort them and you also want to help them, so you've got to react to it, whilst also keeping those boundaries. So there's sort of balancing that goes on. So it is tired. Like, don't feel bad if by the end of a day of reading, or even a couple of readings, even one reading, don't feel bad if you feel tired. I think that's really normal. And then another thing from that is, you need to decompress. So for me, I've noticed if I don't find a way to decompress from those days or from readings with other people, it really can mess with me a lot. And I stopped numbering things. I don't remember what number we're on, sorry. it can be really, really taxing on me and heavy on me. It makes me feel heavy if I don't find some way to get that out of my system. A lot of therapists, I don't know if this is required of all therapists, but I've heard a lot of people say this, therapists have someone that they can talk to about what's going on for them so that they don't keep hold of it all. And I do, I have ways to kind of process things too so that I don't just hold it all inside. You know, it is not good for you to do that. So it's really important to make sure that you are confidential when you're a reader. And, you know, in anything really, I think it's important to be confidential because that person is trusting you with really private, intimate details of their life that you should not tell someone else. You should not reveal their name. You shouldn't reveal things about them. You shouldn't reveal the exact particulars of that situation. Like, excuse me. Anything that is an identifying factor of anything that you hear, you should not pass on, because that is not confidential and is not fair to your client. But I think it's important that you find a way that if you have had a hard day, you can just say, I've had a really hard day today. I had some of these readings were really, they were upsetting. Like the things that were going on for those people, it was really upsetting and I feel sad. Because no matter how many boundaries you have, you're gonna feel those emotions. You're gonna feel sad when someone tells you a sad story or a sad thing that's happening to them. Or you're gonna feel mad because something really crappy happened to someone and they told you or whatever. You know, it's like, I think processing it and being able to say, like, I was really mad today, like I got so mad, is important, because otherwise you hold that stuff in and you just keep hold of it and you can't let go. You have to let go. You can't keep hold of other people's stuff. And to that point, you can't fix other people's stuff either. And this is coming from someone who has always been a huge fixer. Like, I've always been that kind of person that wanted to fix things for people. And it took me a long time to realize you can't fix things for other people. You can't make other people do things. You're not responsible for what other people do. And you can't fix things for other people. Like, being someone who gives readings and gives guidance, you're helping people, you're empowering them to use their own will, their own choices, to be able to do things. But you cannot fix something for them. You can't fix a situation. You can't make a certain thing happen. Like, that's not on you. And sometimes people will want it to be on you because it's a lot easier for us to give away something and hope someone else can do it. Someone else fix it than for us to do it. And I completely get that impulse. It's a human impulse. We all have it. And I'd never hold it against someone, but it's hard. And sometimes you'll get someone who really wants you to be able to give them all the answers and predict completely what's going to happen, and you can't do it, and you can't fix it for them if something happened. But you can help them to figure out the power that they have to be able to do something about themselves, and the power that they have that proves that they are doing a lot better than they probably think they are. You know, a big part of being a reader, I think, is spiritual counsel, and that just means that you're holding space for someone, and holding space is letting them get out what they need to get out without trying to fix it, without trying to make it be something that it's not, you're not trying to sugarcoat it. It doesn't have to be sugary in that room. That's private space. They can say, they can be upset, they can be mad. You know, it's not sugary. It's not always nice what comes out. And sometimes people are going through a really hard time. but you're not there to fix. You're there to help. Does that distinction make sense? I hope so. So yeah, learning about that and boundaries and knowing what you can't do and what you can do is important to know. And just taking care of yourself, like offloading, but just processing, being able to get out your feelings about something so that you don't hold on to them is important. So we're getting to be kind of long this episode again, but hopefully you won't mind. I'm going to go to an ad break now, and then after we come back, I'm going to give you a couple of tips on things you can do if you feel nervous as a reader. Welcome back, my lovelies. So, to get back into it. Now I'm going to give you a couple of tips of things that have helped me in feeling more comfortable and less nervous when I'm giving a reading. So the first thing that has really helped me is that I close my eyes. In most readings now, I close my eyes when I'm reading. And this is for a couple of reasons. For one thing, I find that it helps me to focus more on the messages that I'm receiving. So for me, when I'm doing readings, I'm kind of channeling from that person's spirit guides. I'm also talking to my spirit guides a little bit, but it's mostly their guides. I'm seeing images, I'm sometimes hearing things a little bit, and I'm really just kind of bringing through what I'm receiving. And closing my eyes helps me to do that, because it helps me to focus on what I'm seeing in my head or what I'm receiving through my senses rather than what I'm seeing in front of me. But the other reason that I do that is because if I have my eyes closed, I'm not looking either at the client all the time, and I'm not trying to find someone to rest my eyes so that it doesn't seem odd. So if you're a card reader, this isn't really strictly necessary, because you probably got cards in front of you, right? And then, you know, you're looking at the cards, you're pointing to the cards, whatever. You know, the eye thing might not be that much of a big deal, but for me, I find eye contact quite difficult. Especially knowing how much is too much eye contact, how much is enough, how much is not enough. And if I'm trying to like figure out where to put my eyes, I'm probably thinking at the same time, like, oh my God, am I doing this right? Am I making too much eye contact? Is it not enough? Like, you know, just social anxiety things. So I find that having my eyes closed helps. You know, if you don't feel super confident that you're going to remember, either that you're going to remember the points about the cards, and that you need to look at them to kind of help the images flow through, that's completely fine. Like, don't worry about it. Like, closing your eyes is definitely, might not work for everyone. But if where you're looking is something that makes you anxious, like it does me, and it feels like it's going to detract from what could otherwise flow really well, then definitely consider closing your eyes. And if you're like me and you receive a lot more information, or at least, you know, half and half information of what you see on the card and what you're being shown, then also closing your eyes is, you know, could work for you, because you're not just, you don't have to focus on those images. It also works really well if you're just really well versed with those cards, you know them well, or you have a good memory, you remember the images really well, and you just don't find that you have to look at them to be able to get the information through. So again, that is not a knock. If you need to look at the card images or you feel better looking at them, that's completely okay. But if it's something that you think might help, then try it out. Try giving a reading in some capacity that you close your eyes and just see what happens. I didn't do this for the first, I don't know how long, couple months at least that I was reading at the shop. And when I don't even remember why I started doing it. But I found that when I did, I was a lot less aware of if I sounded odd in how I was presenting what I was trying to say. And it helped with the flow, because I didn't worry about it so much. The other thing is, if you get kind of nervous about trying to explain the cards, think of it like a story. So for me, I find it a lot easier to relate cards to each other and tell a story of how those two cards kind of connect than maybe necessarily trying to read like one card at a time on its own, disconnected from everything else. And if you think about it, our lives aren't like that, and I have my eyes closed as I'm recording this as well, by the way. But our lives don't work like that. Our lives are not like disparate parts that just happen and they, you know, we move from one to the next and we jump. They flow into each other, so everything informs everything else, and cards are like that too. They tell a story. And side note, when I designed my Oracle decks, I made them with that in mind, that I wanted them to be able to tell a story and that you can mix and match them around to tell different stories. So I'm big into the storytelling aspect of card reading. But for one, if you can see the story in the cards, it can help it to be less scary. So for example, you know, if you've got the Fool and I always come up with these off the top of my head. Like the Fool and the Four of Wands. So, yep, that's where I work. So, that's an easy one, I guess. Why did it take me so long? Whatever. the Fool and the Four of Wands. If you look at those in combination and you look at the images, it's like, well, maybe the Fool is stepping off into that party. Maybe he's about to come off the wall from the castle behind and he's going to drop down into that party of people and that drop down onto that carriage, and what would that be like, and what story would that tell, and what would the feeling be like, you know, if you got the Fool, and the playfulness of the Fool combined with that, like, joyful, happy energy of the Four of Wands, what does that say about a client, you know, and then apply that to the question. So if you're looking at, if we're talking about love life, and I see the Fool and the Four of Wands together, it's like, you're taking that step off that cliff, and it might be kind of scary, but it's exhilarating too. It's like something new happening in their love life, like, they're taking that step into the unknown, and they're meeting people that are really fun, and have that, like, super effervescent energy of that Four of Wands, and it's community, and it's, like, meeting new people, and maybe you're going to go to a new place and meet some new people, or, you know, whatever, and you can do that with just every card. If you get two cards together, you can tell stories with it, and then you can tell stories with the more cards that you get as you build up. I feel like it gets easier to tell a story and link them all together, but just focus on two to start with, and don't, you know, if you're not confident with that yet, two is a good place to start, because it's going to help with doing the reading too. If you can make a story that the person can follow, it's a lot harder if you jump around from, like, okay, this card is this, and then I'm going to jump to this completely different card and look at something completely different, and then you keep jumping around. It feels more disjointed and it's harder to follow, and that makes it feel like they don't get as much. Whereas if you can link them all together to tell a story, like, okay, well, we see this here, and then we see this here, and that links back to this, and you start building a web, it's like you're telling a story, and the person getting the reading can see that story, and they see themselves in that story. You know, if you look at tarot, it's like the hero's journey kind of thing, that mythic journey, and you're showing that client, like, here's you in this journey, and here's you as the hero, and this is what you're doing right now, and you can pull them in and make it into a story. And as telling a story is not making things up. You're not making things up, you're not lying, you're not, you know, trying to swindle them, you're not trying to whatever, like, please don't do that. But being able to relate the reading to them by telling a story is you're placing them in the story. And if we look at our lives and we can draw ourselves back in an objective way, then we can see that our lives move in that way. You know, everything is like it's a story that's happening, and then we kind of weave this story all together for all the different moments of our lives, and we get a story at the end of it. So if you can tell, for one thing, if you can tell a story like that with the cards, it's a lot easier to follow. It can also really help people to be able to see kind of salient points from their life that they might not have really thought were connected until you kind of go, oh yeah, look, this theme popped up here, and then now it's coming back up here, and then we can trace that back to this, and you just kind of start to make a something that just makes more sense. You can draw things out for them and help them to see, you know, maybe this needs attention, maybe this needs healing, maybe we need to go back to this kind of thing. And then the other thing too is being able to see something as a story. It makes us feel, there's something about it that makes it feel good. So if someone is having a hard time with something and you can help to draw out the story quality of those experiences, it can feel a little bit less like, oh, everything's so frustrating and everything's so annoying, to being like, look, this is a story, this is something you're moving through, but how can we get you to that place of being able to look back on it and say, wow, like, here's what I learned from that. Here's how I triumphed at the end, and make someone feel good about it, you know? Even if we went through something that was, you know, not a good experience, we can help someone to see what was gained from that. What about that made them a stronger person? What made them the best version of themselves that they are right now? And how can they use that moving forward to keep, you know, telling the story that they want to tell? So that's another really good thing that you can do with people to help them, and also to help yourself, is tell a story. And then, let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I can think of. Oh, one last thing. I don't know if this will help you to feel less nervous or not. But don't be afraid to go intuitively based on what you're getting from the card, even if it's not the traditional meaning of that card. So this happens to me sometimes, where I'll see a card and I'll start saying something and they'll be like, well, this is not the traditional meaning of this card. And I'll usually tell the client, this isn't the traditional meaning. Whether they read tarot themselves or not, I find that it can just be interesting for people to hear that. Like, oh, that's not the traditional, but this is what I'm getting for you. And then relay your experience of what you're getting from it. Like, don't be afraid to go off and go with what you're feeling, because that intuition is that psychic ability, that psychic gift that you have. And almost every single time, it is going to be your personal interpretation, your take, what you're getting that might not be in the book, that is going to be so much more relevant to their life. You're getting that information for a reason, and most people, it resonates for them and it makes the reading even better. And also, I want to say that to say, don't feel like you have to, that you're not a good reader if you can't memorize every single card and then rattle off like every single meaning just like that. That, in my experience, I don't know anyone who, for one, has ever been able to learn that super quickly, or for two, can just do that. I think if you ask me to like, oh, just tell me, like, what does the book say about all these cards, I probably couldn't tell you, you know. I could definitely paraphrase what the traditional meanings are, because I've been reading for a long time, but, like, I couldn't quote to you word for word what is in, say, the original Rider-Waite-Smith book, or whatever. Like, I'm going to say some things that probably aren't in that original book, and I'm probably not going to say some things that are in there, because that's not how I read it. Like, you know, for example, one thing might be like the Four of Coins. So a traditional meaning for the Four of Coins would be someone who's a miser, like they're kind of tight-fisted with their money. But that's not really the first thing that I always go to for the Four of Coins or the Four of Pentacles. If I get the Four of Pentacles in a reading, I'm usually going to say something like, this is, you know, when I see this, I'm seeing someone who is kind of grasping hold of the material things that they've got, of which one thing might be money, but it's not just money, but they're clasping onto it because that's what they know. And there might be other opportunities that are open to them or available, which you can see the city in the background, that might be better for them. They might even know it's better for them, but there's sort of an inherent risk in going for those things, because you have to drop those coins. And if you drop those coins, you don't know that you're going to be able to make them back or pick them back up later on. And that's the Four of Pentacles. The figure is sitting there clutching those pentacles, not wanting to move from the position they're already in, because they feel safe to some degree, even though they're, you know, pinching those pennies, or they're really stressed about money or whatever. Like, they still are in a place of stability, which then you can link back to the number four. So numerologically, four being the number of stability, and it's the square and all of that kind of thing. You can link in all different types of knowledge, but you know, ultimately they're trying to stay stable, even if it's not happiness. So that's not, I don't think that's traditionally in the Rider-Waite book, or not in that exact way, but that's like experience that I've had over time. or things that I've built up over time that make sense to me. And so when I read that card, that's what I see. Don't be afraid to let your own intuition kind of tell you what you see and what works for you. And don't worry about having to know exactly everything. You don't need to rattle off like this, and this, so this, you know, and it just stick by the book. And to that end too, you'll probably find that as you go, your understanding of the cards will broaden and change. I remember talking to one of my fellow readers at the shop about this. We were talking about cards and saying that our perception of certain cards has changed. And it's funny because we I think I said the devil and she said, oh yeah, that's the card I was thinking of too. So it's like we both had that and our perceptions of it had changed. And I mean, she'd been reading for, I don't know, 40 years before she started at the shop, and I had been reading for 15 years. So like that's after some time, and you can still grow and change. When you read, you're always going to grow, you're always going to change, and each person is going to teach you new things. And that's good. Don't be afraid to kind of go off book or go off the established literature or whatever. You can always make new things. You can always tell new stories. So I hope that this is helpful and that you find it useful. I'm going to wrap up there because we've got super long yet. And I'm sending you so much love. If you would like to book a reading with me, you can always come by the Four of Wands in Fayetteville, Arkansas, if you are local. Or you can do it online if you are not local, or if you just prefer. I have an Etsy shop, so that's the Sacred Cocoon at thesacredcocoon.etsy.com. You can find lots of different reading options there. You can also find me on Instagram and DM me or comment to book a reading that doesn't go through Etsy. You know, I can do it through PayPal, through Venmo, whatever. I'm always happy to work on custom readings with people. I do phone readings, I do recorded readings, I love doing in-person readings, so yeah, whatever works for you. I also want to say real quick that I do have my oracle decks for sale. Two of those are for sale at the moment, the Sacred Cocoon Oracle and the Divine Portal Oracle, both of which you can find in my Etsy shop. I've had quite a bit of like questions and interest in that recently, so really excited about that. I'm grateful, thank you so much. And yeah, you can find those in the Etsy shop as well. Anything else, if you have any questions, you can email me at thesacredcocoon@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram again, thesacredcocoon. Yeah, hit me up if you feel like it, if you want to. If you have any questions, any suggestions, any topics you'd like me to talk about, let me know. So yeah, I'm sending you so much love. Bye for now.